Viking believes that a journey on the rivers of the world can be an experience designed for the thinking person. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at raymondjames.com/podcast.
Memories like voices that call on the wind. Mevelin Quinns, Mevelin Quinns, whispered and tossed on the tide coming in. Mevel, oh, Mevelin Quinns.
I'm Jace Lacob, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. It's been 13 months and 23 days since Poldark last aired in the U.S. Not that we're counting. And even though so much time has passed, we're still reeling over the way the first season finale ended. As Aidan Turner, who plays Ross Poldark, puts it.
His Carmel Copper Company that he has so much hope in is bankrupt, liquidation, gone. His relationship with Francis, his best friend, is in pieces, and they've just lost their child.
Not to mention that the last time we saw Ross, he was being carted off to jail.
Captain Poldark, I have orders to take you to Truro Jail.
On what charge?
Wrecking, inciting a riot, murder.
So what can we expect from the highly anticipated second season premiere and season two as a whole?
It's a busy series, maybe 10 episodes, and they're all pretty packed, you know?
In this episode, Aidan Turner gets us all caught up on the season one drama and teases what lies ahead in season two. We are joined this week by Aidan Turner. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
Do you see Poldark as a romantic saga, social commentary, or both?
God, I don't know what I see it as, you know? I mean, the genre is I tried to sort of define it for somebody yesterday. Somebody said, you know, where does Poldark fit in? And I kind of went, I don't really sort of know what show it is. And maybe that's kind of key to its success in a certain way, too. I mean, it is hard to define it. I mean, I don't know. I've never really thought about it. For me, it feels real. You know, I don't play a style. I don't walk into a scene and go, you know, let's throw some romance into this. I mean, it always feels that's down to the cinematographer and the director and our writers and other people and our editors and to do what they do. For me, it's the real world. You know, I'm wearing these, you know, the high boots and the tricorn hat it feels as comfortable as a pair of jeans.
What did you make of the character of Ross Poldark when you first read the script?
I kind of had an idea about what it might be about, you know, even the first couple of pages into reading Winston's book, I thought it might go down a certain route. And very quickly, I was happily surprised that it wasn't. He felt well-rounded to me. I mean, he's not this, you know, heroic kind of Robin Hood guy who rides in on a horse and, you know, the working class hero. He's flawed and he's real and he's 3D, he's layered. There's a lot of this guy I relate to. And it is kind of a rare thing. You know, you read a lot of scripts and you want to respond to things. You know, you open every, you know, you turn every first page, you know, with the thoughts of, I really want to get into this. I really want to like it, you know. I just thought, yeah, great. Everything about this just feels right, you know.
Now, Ross ended the season in chains after the shipwreck on Hendrana Beach. Mm. Where do we find him when we pick back up in season two?
Well, right there. I mean, it's literally the cliffhanger, isn't it? That's what's kind of refreshing too, as an actor, just to pick it up right where you left off. And it's great too, because it's rock bottom, you know. It's lovely to start off a series in complete torment and despair, you know. It's everything has gone wrong for these guys, and sometimes it's nice to kind of start from rock bottom and try to work up. You know, you need to go down to come up sometimes, and it's I mean, time jumps are all well and good, but for starting off a series, it's nice to just pick up where you left off sometimes.
How has he been changed by the events of season one? Is he the same man we saw at the outset of the series?
No. I mean, what are we talking? How many years have passed? I mean, from the first series, we were saying about 3 years from the beginning of series one to the end of it. No, I think he's changed an awful lot. I mean, we see quite an immature Ross when he comes back. I mean, when he walks in and he finds out that Elizabeth is going to be marrying Francis, he's livid. He says, you know, why didn't you? Now, Elizabeth says to him, you know, you didn't write. No one knew where you were, what you were doing. I mean, how can you you expected me to wait for you? And he did. I mean, it's completely irrational. I don't think that's the kind of Ross we see at the end of series one. I mean, he has matured. I think Demelza has helped him do that. You know, she's got a head on her shoulders. Her feet are firmly placed on the ground. And I think she straightens him up a lot.
And you'll not right any wrongs by drinking and gaming and leaving me to fend for myself at my very first ball.
If you behave like this, you'll not come to another.
If you behave like this, I'll not want to.
He's almost petulant, you know. He's incredibly immature, I think, when we meet him first. But it's nice to have a character that you can feel. You know, you're growing with him. You can feel that transition as the first series goes on. You know, he becomes more courageous and yeah.
I mean, one of the more interesting developments in season one is his meeting of this sexless urchin, Demelza, who then becomes, by the end, sort of mistress of Nampara and his wife. What was it like developing their very unlikely and fiery romance, and what was it like working with Eleanor Tomlinson?
What was it like working with Eleanor? I mean, Eleanor's amazing. I mean, they're fantastic actors, and you're helped out, you're guided through it, you know, with actors like that. And Eleanor in particular, because a lot of my scenes are with Eleanor, and Eleanor's one of those actors that she doesn't have a bad take. You know, I can do four takes of something and one of them is usable, you know. With Eleanor, it's like she have your pick, you know. She's giving so much all the time. She's so talented, and she has a lovely demeanor and disposition on set.
Familial relationship between the Poldarks have never been more tense, particularly with the feud between Ross and Francis at this point.
I knew this was Ross's doing.
Why would you think that?
Because he has helped them before. I can see it all. He's encouraged Verity.
We do not know this.
He's been acting as agent to Blamey, keeping the skunk's interest warm and using Demelza as a go-between.
How does that shake out this season?
With Ross and Francis? It's a difficult one for Ross, you know. I don't think he doesn't ever care to see him again, I think. I think he's let it go. I mean, Ross is very good at doing that. He's very good at just annexing, you know, cutting off, quarterizing, see you later, bye. You know, he's great at that. He can hold a grudge like nobody else, you know. But it's something he's always treasured, you know. He was his best friend, you know. He was almost a younger brother kind of thing. I can imagine them, you know, when you're reading the books and you're kind of going through in your head the backstory, and I could always see them, you know, hanging out, and Francis looking up to Ross, and there's advice, and there's, you know, there's inspiration, and when he returns, I think Francis has changed an awful lot in Ross's eyes, and he's become a different person, the person that he never wanted him to be. You know, he's hanging out with the likes of George Willegans, and then he feels betrayed with what happens with the Carmore Copper Company and the names, and he feels like Francis again has sold him down the river, and he has enough of it. And it's so sad, you know. I mean, Francis is such a pitiful, it probably isn't the right word, but, you know, he feels so sorry for him. He's such a good guy, you know. There's a scene that every time I see it, it just kills me. There's a scene in series two when Francis and Elizabeth, it's that thing. Oh, I don't know. I'm rambling now. Let's go to the next question. I'm just thinking about that scene.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors. Ocean voyages, expeditions, river journeys. Viking is dedicated to bringing travelers closer to the destination, offering a small ship experience and a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com. Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central.
What is at the root of Ross and George's rivalry in season one?
Well, I mean, George is the profit over people sort of guy, you know. I mean, Ross will never respect somebody like that. George's whole mentality, I guess, his business sort of acumen would be, we need to shut down these mines and these smelting companies. We need to move them to cheaper areas where we can make more profit. Screw the local community and the people around us that we've known for years. But Ross sees it like, if we just invest here, if we give it a decade, okay, we're not going to make money back straight away, but the floor will raise, we lift. I mean, people will have jobs and it'll flourish around here. But we're not going to see results very quickly. And he just doesn't understand how George can't see this, you know. That's somebody Ross wouldn't like to associate with. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to Ross. And I mean, George is one of those people. He's uh, he always wanted to be in the gang. You know, he's the son of a grandson of a blacksmith. You know, and he's nouveau riche. You know, it's all new money. And Ross can just see through it. He's fickle and he's shallow. And friendship and doesn't mean anything really to George at all.
I wonder if he might not be useful to us. His father's dead. He's no obvious source of income. If we could rally him to our cause.
To what end?
He has an ancient family name. Doors which are closed to us might open for him.
And he always wanted to be in the gang, you know. Ross is the leader of the gang. He's the cool guy. Ross seamlessly sort of slips between the aristocracy and the gentrified figures at the balls and at the parties. And then equally, he can be down with Zachy Martin and the minor boys and you know, swinging back whiskey and dance around. George can't do any of that. And George would like to, you know. If George could take a lot back, he would. He would swap a lot, you know. I don't think he's as nasty as sometimes people might think, you know. He's in it now, and he's got to rally on. He's got to live it out.
What is it that offends you, Ross? That we Warlegans have dared to drag ourselves out of poverty and aspire to gentility?
Poverty doesn't offend me, nor does aspiration, but you are mistaken if you think greed and exploitation are the marks of a gentleman.
I mean, there's the rivalry. Why Ross entertains us so much, I don't know. You know, that's another side of Ross that you kind of go, I mean, because there's something quite immature about that too. I mean, they're having fistfights in bars. I mean, they're smacking their heads off each other. I mean, who does this? You know, these guys, they're in their 30s and they're just having scraps all around town. It's crazy. I love it, you know?
But it is like that relationship was forged in their early teen years and they have not grown.
They've never gotten
that,
over it, yeah. But I love the way they don't want to get over it, you know? I mean, the second series, we see George and he's training, you know, he's boxing. You know, it's getting so vicious now. I mean, they're dedicating their lives to torturing each other. But it means a lot, you know? It's about a bigger thing. It's not just a personal feud. There's bigger themes here, you know? And we see that really sort of peak in the second series.
In season one, it was quite easy to root for Ross, as he often nobly put the needs of others before himself. Mm. Did you find it harder to root for him this season, given his actions?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't know. It's weird when you're playing somebody. I don't know if you're rooting for them necessarily. You're living it. You're doing it, and it's who you are. I mean, you root for yourself a lot of the time. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what the audience think, but it just made it more real for me. You know, he's complex, layered character, person. I mean, maybe we need to see more of that in the first series in a way, but it was certainly very exciting and interesting to explore that side of Ross's character in the second series.
I mean, he's more human. He's not that sort of godly heroic
figure. He's
definitely flawed.
I think so, but it seems real to me. I mean, people do make mistakes, you know. They're this is part of life and we learn from them, you know. That's how we grow. That these are important, you know. It's win or learn, you know. Not win or lose.
You know, what is Ross, how does Ross cope with setback, and what does it say about his character how he deals with defeat?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I find quite inspiring for playing Ross. It's tough. He takes a lot of knocks, you know, but he just picks himself up, you know. He dusts himself off, picks himself up by his bootstraps and carries on, you know. He's back up on the saddle and he's making something work again. And that's what I love about him. I think that's the key to Ross, you know. Okay, he makes some dodgy moves there's some weird judgment calls now and again, questionable things that he does. But he's a doer, you know. Not always a thinker, but certainly he's a doer. I think his heart is in the right place and the moral compass is pointing in the right direction. And that's, now we're getting into, you know, some of the more positive sort of sides of Ross's character that are fun to play. And yeah.
There's been a lot of press about your discomfort about being a sex symbol, which you described as, quote, a little awkward in an interview with The Independent. Were you concerned that the scything scene last season might eclipse everything else that the show has to offer?
No, I never did. And it was my idea. I mean, we were in the field shooting the scene, and we were rehearsing, and I had the shirt on. and I just said, this is ridiculous. I mean, why would it? There's so much work here. It's the middle of the summer. Why ruin a good shirt? But there's so much more going on in that scene. I mean, in the background, we have Elizabeth riding up to tell Ross that possibly she's made a mistake, you know, that you are the one I love. There's so much happening. And I guess people just focused. I was just quite surprised. I just didn't get it. And I still don't get it, really. I mean, I suppose it was useful in some ways, too. I mean, it was episode two?
Two.
Right. So, I mean, it was probably in a way quite useful because it shone the the spotlight on us a bit more, and it was all over the tabloids. Maybe more people tuned in or something. But for me, there's no. It completely makes sense. I think it still holds its integrity and its merits, and there's nothing that really changed about it, you know. And it was one take as well, which I'm quite proud of. We had two cameras and one take, so that was kind of, we just had one crack of the whip on that one. But yeah.
So you got your one take.
Got my one take. One take Turner, huh?
Season one had romance, feuds, shipwrecks, and murder. How does season two compare, and what lies ahead on Poldark?
Wow. Yeah, it's big. I mean, there's huge arcs for all of our characters. As I said, I mean, starting off series two at rock bottom. It's huge. You know, they're it's the first time we see their relationship really on the rocks, you know. It's losing a child. I can't imagine kind of what that's like and what they have to face. And it seems hopeless, you know, and when you're left with nothing, it's pretty grim. But when you hit those sort of periods in your life, you just fall back onto what is actually important. You know, it's friendship, and it's love, and it's compassion, and it's solidarity. And these are the things that really count.
Poldark returns to Masterpiece in full force with a 2-hour premiere this Sunday, September 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. As Aidan Turner promises, season two will be huge, but don't just take his word for it.
What's great about season two, and I think it makes it equally as good as season one, is that
everything just clicked into place.
It's quite dark.
Jealousy is explored.
I'm not there to get hugs and kisses.
You know, marriage isn't easy.
You wish you could just slap him across the face and say, buddy, it's gonna be all right. Just say you're sorry.
People are saying slap. She hit me. That was a left hook. That was a closed fist.
I've the scar to prove it. If you look closely on the next episode, you'll see it.
But then there's also Ross, who just can't quite seem to live by the rules and avoid, you know, getting into trouble with the law. And
there was one moment when I'm on Seamus, the Irish stallion, right?
Very dangerous.
And I'm riding the horse holding two pistols.
Real life flintlock pistols.
It was a breath of fresh air as a scene.
It's pretty epic.
It was so cool.
But it kind of like leaves, obviously, a lot of complications.
Oh my God, I'm getting heart palpitations actually just thinking about it.
It's been great fun.
It gets really exciting. It's a very exciting series actually because it's so realistic.
As you watch all of the season 2 drama unfold, be sure to tune into the Masterpiece Studio podcast to hear from your favorite Poldark actors and get an inside look at the series. Following the premiere, we're kicking off our season of tell-all episodes with the mistress of Nampara herself, Demelza Poldark, aka Eleanor Tomlinson.
I basically begged them to audition me, and they did, and I got the job, so yeah, I was incredibly lucky.
As always, you can listen to the Masterpiece Studio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and at pbs.org/masterpiece. But to get early access to Eleanor Tomlinson's interview and each of the episodes that follow, be sure to subscribe. So get out your phone or computer, open up your favorite podcast listening app, type in Masterpiece Studio, and hit subscribe to get automatic downloads of episodes as soon as they're released. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Nick Anderson. Alicia Baitoop is our editor. Suzanne Simpson is our executive producer. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Rebecca Eaton. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises and the Masterpiece Trust.